So back when I attended middle school or junior high, a few of my friends and I began something that we called the Sayings of Master Poe. I don't remember how we came up with that name, but Master Poe was an imaginary wise person, and we used to write these little sayings for him. And I wish I had some copies of that stuff, because I believe we had come up with some pretty funny things. I can't remember much of it now, but they were just stupid little phrases, little wise sayings like, a room with no doors is difficult to leave, you know, stuff like that. And what goes around usually gets dizzy and falls over, or a day without sunshine is like nighttime, you know. The wise sayings of Master Poe, good old Master Poe. Well, last Sunday we entered into a new sermon series on the biblical book of Proverbs, and so as I have been spending a lot of time in that book over the last few weeks, Master Poe came back into my mind. Of course, with the book of Proverbs, we're talking about actual wise sayings and not the silly little things that I wrote with my friends for Master Poe back when I was 13. Last week we looked at my favorite proverb, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Today, we're going to talk for a moment about this book, who wrote it, when it was written, what it's about, those kinds of things, and then we will also read a few of the proverbs today and see what we can learn from them. So a proverb, if you haven't figured out by now, is a short, wise saying, similar to these silly examples I gave you from Master Poe. They are observations about truth, about life, about how things work. And the book of Proverbs is filled with hundreds of these wise sayings, most of them, not all, but most of them, written by King Solomon. Who was King Solomon? Well, many of you, of course, will be familiar with King David, the same David who, as a young man, brought the giant Goliath down with his slingshot, the same David who became the best king that Israel ever saw. Well, Solomon is David's son, so this is the man who took over as king for Israel after David died, and that took place in 970 BC, so 970 years before Christ. King Solomon's an interesting figure. He presided over Israel at the time of its absolute, the height of its wealth and power. You know, most of the history of Israel involves them getting kicked around by countries that were more powerful than they were. If there was ever a time when Israel was the country doing the kicking, it was under Solomon. They were at their most powerful at that time. God had promised to bless the people of Israel if they stayed true to him, if they followed his commands and honored him. And now David, although he had, of course, a few moments of great disobedience, for the most part lived his life for the Lord and with a passion. God was in his heart, and David looked to God as he led the country. So Solomon inherited from his father then a country that was being blessed because of David's faithfulness, so says the biblical record. And Solomon started out on a similar path of reverence for the Lord. He built the temple in Jerusalem. And there are records in the Bible of Solomon calling upon all of the people of Israel to revere the Lord and follow his commands. There's a story of an interaction between God and Solomon in his early years as king, where God told Solomon to ask him for anything that he wanted, and God would give it to him. Solomon asked in response to be given great wisdom and discernment so that he could lead his country well, and God was very pleased at how he handled that situation. 1 Kings chapter 3 tells us that God said to him, "Since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but instead for discernment in administering justice. I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life." So the story goes that Solomon led his country into this time period of peace and prosperity and wealth. He had good relationships with most of the neighboring countries. He was cutting trade deals with them. He built an impressive palace for himself. He fortified the walls of Jerusalem. He led with great wisdom. The terribly disappointing thing in this story is that, you know, after you read about the 40 years that he was in power, you begin to realize that after he finished the temple, you really don't read much anymore about what Solomon did for God or his walk with God or how he led the people to worship the Lord. The story pretty much becomes all about his great cunning and wisdom and wealth and power. And then the story ends in tragedy. As kings did back in those days, Solomon took for himself many, many wives. Some of them were from foreign countries. And some of those women from foreign countries worshipped false gods, the gods of their country. After a while, Solomon not only allowed those women to worship their false gods within Israel, but he even began to join them in that worship. 1 Kings chapter 11 describes it this way. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David the father, his father had done. And Solomon and his country would pay the price for this. Solomon's son would not inherit the entire kingdom from his father. A rebellion occurred, and 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel split off from Solomon's heir and formed their own union, and the glory years for Israel were done. A sad ending, a very sad ending to a story that had started out so well. And it really is too bad, because things had been amazingly good. When you look back at the descriptions of those early years under Solomon, I mean, it was good to live in Israel. You'll see comments like this from chapter 4 of 1 Kings. The people of Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand on the seashore, it says. They ate, they drank, they were happy. During Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel from Dan to Beersheba lived in safety, everyone under their own vine and under their own fig tree. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. And his fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. So in addition to proverbs, he also wrote songs, and one of them has found its way into our Bible called the Song of Songs. He spoke about plant life, from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also spoke about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. From all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. Okay, so Solomon had some time on his hands because of all this peace and prosperity that Israel was experiencing at that time. And as I imagine it then, Solomon used some of this time that he had to sit around and think up wise sayings and have them written down. And this is the background for the book that we're studying on Sunday mornings now. The wise sayings of King Solomon from his early years, I believe, before he wandered from God. The book of Proverbs. Let's get into the book now and look at the opening passage found in Proverbs chapter 1. We're going to be bouncing around Proverbs quite a bit today, but if you want to look at chapter 1 with me in your Bibles, you're certainly welcome to. And if you want to use the black Bibles there in your chairs, chapter 1 of Proverbs is found on page 628. Page number 628, Proverbs 1, and we will look at the first seven verses. Proverbs 1, verse 1 says this: "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior and wise living, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning. Let the discerning get guidance for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise." And then a key verse in verse 7. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom." and instruction. So these first seven verses serve as the purpose statement for the entire book of Proverbs. And we can see that the stated purpose there is to help the reader become wise. Verse 2, it is for gaining wisdom and instruction. Kind of interesting that the Hebrew word for that's translated wisdom there actually means skill. So these Proverbs are designed to help the reader become skilled at living life. Skilled at living. Then in verse 7, we see that Solomon here and elsewhere in the book grounds wisdom in respecting God. The fear of the Lord, it says, is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. Fear of the Lord means reverence for, respect for, and obedience to God. And this is the basis and the foundation for living wisely, says the king. Wise living is the title for our sermon series on this book of Proverbs. And we can expect to get some tips from our study of this book that will help us learn how to become more skilled at living life successfully. Well, with Proverbs, we've run into another book here that does not lend itself real well to a chapter-by-chapter sermon study because it's so haphazard in the subjects that it covers. Topics change very quickly. I'll give you an example. If you want to turn with me, if you have your Bibles open, to chapter 10, we'll just read some of it so you can get kind of a feel, if you haven't read Proverbs before, a feel of how this book goes. Let me read for you there some of chapter 10, starting with the first verse. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son brings grief to his mother. Ill-gotten treasures have no lasting value, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. Blessings crown the head of the righteous, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. The name of the righteous is used in blessings, but the name of the wicked will rot. The wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. A room with no doors is difficult to leave. Oh, sorry, that was a... That was one of Master Poe's got in there by mistake. Well, you can see most of these proverbs are two lines long, and then they're followed immediately by another proverb, which can usually is a completely different topic. And while that format is not all that terrible for personal Bible study, it's a little awkward for sermon writing. And so what I'm going to do instead of going chapter by chapter is to pull themes out of this book for you, ideas that show up multiple times in its pages, and there are a good number of those. And I think that studying these themes will give us a real good grasp of the core ideas that Proverbs has for us in gaining wisdom. And so I would like to flesh out for you now one of those themes from Proverbs, and we'll use our remaining time here this morning discussing that. And what we will look at here is definitely one of the primary themes from this book, though you have to bounce all over the place to see it. Let me read some Proverbs for you now and see if you can catch the theme. If you're still in chapter 10, look over at verse 17. It says this, "Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray." And then over to chapter 12, and it's going to be probably too difficult for you to keep with me there in Proverbs because we're going to bounce so much, so you may just want to look up at the screen now. Chapter 12, verse 1 says, "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid." Fairly blunt there. Then verse 15 of the same chapter, "The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice." Chapter 13, verse 10, "Where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice." Chapter 15, verses 31 to 32, "Whoever heeds life-giving correction will be at home among the wise. Those who disregard discipline despise themselves, but the one who heeds correction gains understanding." Chapter 19, verse 20, "Listen to advice, accept discipline, and at the end you will be counted among the wise." So what's the theme? The theme is, if you want to become skilled at living, get good at receiving advice and even correction and discipline. If you want to become skilled at living, get good at receiving advice and even correction and discipline. And not just from people. Chapter 3, verse 11 to 12 says, "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline. Do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father disciplines the son he delights in." So get good at receiving correction from people and from God. Seek to gain advice from others. Be a learner. Especially if you're a leader or you are about to go into some new venture, you're planning something, it'll be smart for you to seek counsel. Chapter 11, verse 14. "For lack of guidance, a nation falls, but victory is won through many advisors." And chapter 15, verse 22. "Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed." Now, it doesn't say this directly in these Proverbs, but I think we can be sure that when Solomon says these things to us, he does not mean that we should go to foolish people for advice. You know, he's wanting you to go to wise, godly people, right? Solomon has plenty to say in this book about foolish people or evil people. Certainly, he would not want you to go to them for counsel. But advice and even correction and being disciplined by wise, godly people or from God himself, that can be a very valuable thing. In fact, it's the mark of foolishness. It's the mark of a foolish person, Solomon says, to get combative when someone seeks to correct them. Look at chapter 9, verse 7. "Whoever corrects a mocker, a foolish person, invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. Teach the righteous, and they will add to their learning." Okay, so he's saying there that if you are trying to offer valuable correction to a foolish person, that person might bite back with insults and hateful comments directed towards you. But a wise person will not react like that, but instead will seek to learn from what is being said to them. There's a phrase that often is spoken in church settings that's really appropriate here, and it happens to also be from the book of Proverbs, chapter 27, verse 17. "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." Now, you know, metals are not sharpened by hugging them, okay? No, you sharpen a knife by bringing it into contact with an abrasive, right? There is a grinding and a friction that takes place. And if the knife was alive and had feelings, you could imagine that the sharpening process might actually be painful for it. But it's a pain that brings about a good result. The friction removes parts of the knife that are hindering it from being effective. So as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Correction, discipline, receiving advice, it might feel painful at the time, but it can be a very good thing. I'm actually going to bring in another theme here now from the book of Proverbs. It's a separate theme, but I think it's going to help us with this main theme that we're concentrating on today. So have you heard this phrase before? "Pride goeth before the fall." Also from the book of Proverbs. We find it in chapter 16, verse 18. "Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall." Chapter 11, verse 2. "When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom." Chapter 25, verses 6 to 7. "Do not exalt yourself in the king's presence. Do not claim a place among his great men. It's better for him to say to you, 'Come up here,' than for him to have to humiliate you before his nobles." And similarly, in chapter 27, verse 2, "Let someone else praise you, not your own mouth, an outsider, and not your own lips." So don't lift yourself up. Be humble. If you're going to get lifted up, let somebody else do it. And then one more there, chapter 15, verse 33. "Wisdom's instruction is to fear the Lord, but humility comes before honor." So here is the second theme, also a tip on how to become skillful at living life. Solomon, in writings that would become scripture, encouraged people to be humble. To be humble. A tip for wise living. And if you want to follow the central tip that we're looking at today from Solomon about becoming good at receiving advice and correction and discipline, then you are also going to need to integrate this second tip into your life as well, aren't you? You're going to need to be a humble person in order to accomplish our main tip for today. Can you think back to a time in your life when someone told you that they thought you weren't doing something correctly in the way you were living or in the way you were acting? And can you remember what your initial reaction was to that person? Is there any chance that you felt a little angry? I can think of some examples from my life. When you attend a smaller college like Bethel University, which is not that small, but certainly small in comparison to the U of M or something like that, once you choose a major, you discover that you may be taking an awful lot of classes from the same professor because there's probably only two or three professors in each area of study in the school, and that was the case for me. For my first 3 years at Bethel, I was a cultural studies major, which is sociology, and a music minor. And then right at the end of my junior year, I flip-flopped those two and became music major, cultural studies minor. But regardless, I had many, many classes during my time at Bethel under the instruction of one of the main cultural studies professors there, who I will call Mr. W today for the sake of anonymity. Mr. W was a good man who loved his subject. He loved studying people, and I learned a lot from him. But I think I had 5 classes from him throughout my time there. And as these classes went along, I began to develop this opinion about his classes. I began to develop this opinion that many of his assignments were really kind of just busy work. Rightly or wrongly, that was my thinking back then. And as I reflect on it now, I think I started to get a bit arrogant. And this wasn't characteristic of me in general, I don't think, but it was true for me in his classes. I began to feel that those general exercises he handed out and his little quizzes were pointless. And so as time went by, I just kind of stopped doing them. I would turn them in late or maybe not at all. They were not a high percentage of your overall grade according to the syllabus, and so I kind of ignored them and I simply studied for the tests. I figured as long as I aced the main tests, it should work out mathematically for me to end up with a pretty decent grade at the end. That worked for a while. But by the time of my final class with Mr. W during my senior year, I think that not only had I had enough of his classes, but he had had enough of me as a student. I conducted myself in that final class as I had in some of the previous ones, not turning in the assignments, but getting A's on all of the main tests. Again, now, according to the syllabus, this should have worked out. Well, we got to the end of the semester, and Mr. W turned in his grade of my performance. He gave me a D. Now, I had never received a D in any class in high school or in college, and I was so angry. How could he do this? I got A's on all of his tests. He went against his own syllabus. Well, I never did go in to talk to him about it because I think I knew I had not been the model student. So I just, you know, stewed in my anger. Well, he had given me some discipline, right? And I reacted in anger, but now I look back on it and I realize he was right to give me that grade. I had developed an arrogant attitude, a bad attitude, and even though I learned the material for the tests, taking a class and being a good student is more than just about getting A's on tests. So he took that opportunity, his final opportunity to give me a grade, and he used it to teach me a life lesson, I think, and I believe I'm the better for it. And, you know, I could think of other examples from my life if I spent time doing that about moments of receiving correction. I know that I've told you in the past about the older kid on the bus when I was in sixth grade who told me I was the biggest greaser on the bus because I was still stuck in the elementary school mode of only occasionally taking showers, even though my body had now matured to the point where I really ought to be taking one just about every day. He called me a greaser, and now, I wasn't so much angry as I was just mortally embarrassed when he said that to me. But guess what? I started taking showers every single day after that. And all of you still benefit from this moment in my life where I received this unsolicited advice. I imagine you can all think of moments like this from your lifetime too, and I'll bet that as you think back over those moments, you might remember reacting in anger too. Man, nobody likes getting told that what they're doing is wrong. It can be hurtful to hear that, and I think for many of us, when we feel that hurt, it gets the fight going in us. And maybe in our heads, we think to ourselves, who are you to say such a thing to me? Maybe we even say that out loud. That's wounded pride speaking, isn't it? It's pride. How dare you tell me to change my behavior? We feel hurt, so we react with anger or maybe depression or something like that. But the book of Proverbs is clearly telling us to move towards having a different reaction in those circumstances. We're to be humble people, not prideful people. And if somebody tells us they think we are off target in something, we are to, at the very least, listen calmly, consider what they are saying. We're not to react in anger. Now, everybody and their mother has an opinion, right? Just because a person thinks that you are off does not necessarily mean that you are off. So, you know, respectfully take in what the person is telling you. Think about it, pray about it. And a really good idea, I think, would be to go talk to other wise, godly, trusted people that you have in your life and ask them if they see the same thing in you as this person has brought to your attention. But then at some point, you need to make a decision about whether you're going to accept this advice that they've given you or whether you're going to reject it. You know, if we tried to adjust our behaviors in response to every single opinion that we ever received from people, if we tried to move in the direction that every single person in our lives thinks we should move in, we might never move anywhere. So you have to sort these things through. Try to be discerning about what to accept and what to reject. But it seems to me that the point to draw from these proverbs we've looked at today is that when we find ourselves in situations where someone is offering advice to us or is bringing correction upon us, we need immediately to move in our heads to a position of being humble, of being a learner. We need to not allow anger to rise up in us, but instead we should calmly listen to what these people are saying to us. And then after that conversation, we should consider what they've said, make a determination as to whether this is an opinion to let fall to the wayside or whether this is a situation where iron is sharpening iron and where we will benefit from hearing and heeding the words that have been communicated to us. Well, these are not the sayings of Master Poe. These are the sayings of Master Solomon. And we ought to heed them because even though King Solomon moved away from God towards the end of his life, he was with him in the beginning, and we saw that God had pledged to give him a wise and discerning heart and to make him into a person unlike any who had come before or who would come after. Stands to reason then that it would be good for us to spend a little time reading and considering the words of Solomon that have been passed on to us in the Bible. And today those words have told us that we need to get good at humbly receiving advice and even correction and discipline. These are things that will help us become skilled at living life. These are tips for wise living.